And we're live. What's up, guys? My name is Dakota, and this is my podcast. It's called A Place for Humans Podcast, and this is a place for humans. You know, I guess English-speaking humans for the most part, but anyone's welcome, and even outside of humans. But what we talk about is mostly human things here, and right now, what's going on in the human world? We got coronavirus going on in the human world right now, all over the world. I was just living in Peru for 6 months. I just got back home into the United States in Detroit. That's where I'm at right now. I live in Detroit, and that's in Michigan. And, I was in Peru for 6 months. And I planned to go to Colombia after Peru. But then all the corona stuff happened. I was in the middle of the jungle, in the middle of the Amazon jungle. And we had Wi-Fi in the village that we're at, in one area. At this retreat center, Arcana. This is where I was at. I was making YouTube videos for this retreat center called Arcana Spiritual Retreat. And I made really good friends with all the people that work there and with the owner there. His name's Jose. And yeah, I mean, they're like family at this point. So we were all just... I've been at Arcana since January. And this would have had to have been in March. So I've already been in Arcana, or in Peru, for a few months at this point, you know? And I'm in the middle of the jungle at this retreat center. You can only get Wi-Fi in one room. We're hanging out in this room. You don't even really get Wi-Fi. I mean, it takes like, you know, a couple minutes to load an Instagram photo. But we're getting news that, like, of all the corona stuff. And I was like, there's no way that it's going to be as big as it ended up being. You know, I was like, there's no way they can shut down the country. Because they were talking about that. They were like, you know, this might lead to shutdowns and stuff like that. And I was like, having lived through the bird flu, swine flu, Ebola, didn't really think much of it. And, I didn't think any of the economies could sustain being closed this long. And I imagine a lot of them are struggling. I know a lot of people are struggling, although, especially in Peru, you know, where these people that really rely on, their job is like a social type of job where it's like, you know, selling things on the street, or, you know, you're a farmer and you sell in the market or something like that. And, now there's no markets and you're not allowed to leave your house. The government's not helping you. Like what do you do? Crazy situation. So anyways, I'm in the middle of the Amazon jungle. You know, we're two hour boat ride from civilization down the river. And, my sister is here with me at this point, and she ended up, we ended up leaving the jungle to go up to the mountains. We were supposed to hang out in the jungle for a while, but for some reason, my sister was just, you know, overwhelmed being in the Amazon jungle. It's hard to hang out there, especially when you're drinking ayahuasca, and, you know, it's just not an easy thing to go through. And she busted out a few days, or about a week, in the jungle, and then, we went to the mountains. Arcana has another center in the mountains. We went to Arcana in the mountains in the Sacred Valley in Cusco, about an hour, 2 hours from Cusco, in a little town called Urubamba. Just outside Urubamba is Arcana. And so that's where I was staying from March until June. And Yeah, that place feels like, really, it feels like my home. You know, I had my own room there, and we got quarantined. Like, about eight of us got quarantined together there. Two shamans, Coleman from Canada, who you guys have seen in another podcast. We talked about shamanism and ayahuasca. Coleman. Fernanda, who you guys seen in the Huachuma video. If you guys don't know what Huachuma is like one of the oldest psychedelics that humans have been using traditionally. And we made a video about how to prepare it and how to use it ceremonially. And yeah, it's a cool video. Who else? Oh, you can pretty much see everyone in that Huachuma video. You can see the shamans. Fernando's from Argentina. There was Denise, she's from Mexico. Adriana, she's from the jungle in Peru. And yeah, it was just basically, all of us stuck at this ayahuasca center with these shamans. And my sister left. My sister has three kids, and she's she can't afford to be stuck in Peru in South America during quarantine. So anyway, she booked her ticket and she went home, and she left the day before they locked down the country. And I was supposed to go to Colombia a week later. And I was just like, so once it got locked down, I was like, okay, well, I'll just ride it out, How long can they lock the country down for? So then March turns to April, turns to May, and I'm just like, holy shit, man, I can't believe it's been weeks and weeks and weeks since it's been locked down. And we're doing ayahuasca once a week or sometimes twice a week, and we're doing Huachuma ceremonies once a week, and crazy time in my life. Crazy time in my life. And I had to take a flight. Like a humanitarian flight with the embassy, set up with the embassy. They charged me like $2,000, so I don't really know how it's a humanitarian flight. But the embassy was helping get stranded Americans out of Peru through like Peru's military base. So I flew out through that at the beginning of this month in June. And yeah, doing ayahuasca. I mean, this doing ayahuasca. I don't know how these shamans do ayahuasca all the time. It's such a like even Coleman. Like how Coleman? How do you do ayahuasca all the time? Because I consider myself like a psychonaut, and I consider myself like a someone that's like seasoned or at least has an understanding of how to use the psychedelic experience for spiritual benefits or like to utilize it from a shamanic perspective. And yeah, those guys go real hard for me, man. Like they're going so hard. Ayahuasca is such a just an intense experience to go through physically. Like I would compare ayahuasca is comparable to a high dose of mushrooms, but there's noticeable differences. The visions are different, and I can't explain what is different about the visions, but there's definitely different types of visions that come from ayahuasca instead. Like if you've ever seen DMT visuals, that's kind of what ayahuasca looks like. Whereas mushrooms, it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain what the visual difference is. And but the physical difference is, and you can puke on mushrooms, no doubt, but ayahuasca is so like can be so physically strange, and sometimes it can be physically orgasmic. Like you can, I've had orgasmic ayahuasca ceremonies where I'm just like, oh, everything feels so amazing. I've had ceremonies where I'm just like so energetic, where I feel like I could run a mile. I've had energetics where I'm like crying in the. I've had ceremonies where I'm crying in the fetal position. I've had ceremonies where like I'm just puking and puking and puking. So ayahuasca is very unpredictable, and it's very physical. And it's very nature. It's very like it tastes like nature. It tastes like you're drinking some shot of earth sludge, And somehow in drinking this concoction made of plants and dirt and who knows what else, and, you know, ancient spirits, you drink this thing and the genie of the jungle appears as a divine goddess or some sort of mother of the jungle or protector. A guide, a spirit guide, appears and offers its wisdom to you. Sometimes she appears in the form of an animal. Sometimes she appears in the form of a masculine figure. I've seen it come to me as a praying mantis, as a shapeshifter, whatever it is. Either it's a shapeshifter, whatever the spirit to ayahuasca is, or it's a portal or gateway to a world where these things exist. A doorway into to the imagination, or a doorway into the spirit world. And I've seen praying mantis. That's been a reoccurring entity. These giant praying mantis aliens is a reoccurring entity that appears to me on ayahuasca. Serpents, insects, little beetles, little centipedes. Dead people. Just like a presence of something super divine. The presence of something super scary. You feel all kinds of things with ayahuasca. It's a very, I don't know what it is. The Shipibo, which are the shamans that I've been living with in Peru, they believe that you're really tuning into a spiritual dimension, to just some kind of afterlife or some kind of world of some kind of unphysical world where there are entities and intelligences that are lingering there, and they believe that not only are we inherently connected to that world, but we're sort of disconnected to it, and we don't even, you know, we don't realize it exists, normal people. But the shamanic practice is the ability to, or it's like becoming a student. The shaman is a student of that dimension, of the trance, of consciousness. The shaman is a student of consciousness, and it is looking at consciousness through a microscope. What happens if I do this? What happens if I go into isolation and I don't eat sugar, I don't eat salt, I don't eat oils, I only eat once a day, I only drink water, and on top of that I'm taking a psychedelic plant? What happens if I do all this? What happens if I don't sleep? What happens if I don't have sex? They're looking at consciousness through a microscope. And in this endeavor that's been lasting and echoing for millennia after millennia and millennia, shamanism is the oldest human religion and spiritual practice on this planet. We have a deep understanding and a deep well of knowledge for those that are interested in learning about this path that is out there. Not only is it out there, but we still do it today. We still do all these shamanic practices today. They're just not expressed in the sort of ancient tribal ways that they were once expressed. They're expressed in a sort of new modern way. What are some modern expressions of tribalism? Let's look at it. Not only tribalism, but shamanism. Body piercing. Tattooing. You know when people like hook themselves and dangle on those giant hooks and do the pain type of stuff? This is a shamanic practice. This is testing the limits and the capacities of your body, of your spirit, of your mind, of your soul, of your consciousness. Plants, yoga. These things are integral to the human experience, you know? So let's think of tribal shamanism. First thing that pops in my head is drumming. You got some people making drums. And in and around those drums, maybe you have a fire. And around that fire, you have people that are dancing and spinning and making all kinds of noises. And if you do that long enough, something happens. The trance happens. And I don't know if the trance... What is the trance? Is the trance a connection with some divine other? Is it you're dancing your distractions away? Say you're dancing around a fire. You know, you're just losing yourself. Or you're like a whirling dervish, Sufi. And you're just, you're spinning your way out of the attachments and distractions of the human body, out of the senses. You're no longer engaged with the outside world. You let all that stuff go by completely and fully engaging with the moment, with the now, movement. That's what the universe is. The universe is infinite movement. It's always changing, growing, morphing. And just, that's why it's infinite, 'cause it just keeps going and just keeps growing. And when we tune in with that, there's a connection that's made with something. And I don't know if it's a connection with your higher self. Are you connecting with your higher self? And there's the part of your ego that identifies with, you know, all the lower aspects of yourself. Like, I do this for a living. I make this much money. And I like these types of brands on my clothes. And, you know, the social aspects of ourselves that are really not the deeper aspects of the mystery of who we are as human beings in the universe. You know, just these sort of things that we identify with to be cool and to human things, not spirit things. And, shit, what was I talking about? Fuck. I got an idea. Let me try this real quick, see if this helps. Oh, yeah, that's right. So, are you connecting with your higher self, or are you connecting with some sort of intelligence that exists beyond the distractions of our perceptions? Like, is there some kind of world that exists overlapping our world? It's got to be possible, right? It's got to be possible that there's, like, simultaneously things that are happening that are just, like, beyond our comprehension, beyond our senses. We have senses that are limited to our body's evolutionary needs, right? Sharks have different senses. Like, sharks have these senses on their bodies where these energetic pulses bounce off their body and reflect, like, it'll hit something and reflect back to them. So they'll know if something is next to them or something like that. And you could argue maybe humans have something similar, like where you can kind of tell if there's someone staring at you or... But sharks definitely have this kind of, this thing. And so what I'm trying to get at is that there are senses that we don't have. So there are other experiences out there that we don't have. Bats, think of like the way a bat goes through life and how it experiences reality. It has echolocation, so it'll like scream at an object and that echo will bounce back and produce an image for that bat to see the world. So is it possible that there could be like something that's like overlapping our reality that we just can't see because we are too distracted by all of our attachments? Like, how much of reality do we actually even see that is real and not just us? Because like we associate everything with something. That doesn't really make any sense. Let me try to explain that. Like, when... If you have two different people look at one thing, they might not see the same thing because of their life experience and the associations that whatever that object is relates to them. Does that make sense? Let me try to explain that better. Let me think of like a good example. Like the Confederate flag, for example. Someone might look at the Confederate flag and be like, and feel like loving and endearing, and like some sort of endearment, because that's the flag that they saw hanging up in their house, their grandma's house or something. And to them, it represents kind of this warm feeling of love, and it has doesn't have anything to do with race. That was a flag that my grandma hung in her house, you know? Not my grandma, but while others will see that flag as like enemies of everything America stands for. America stands for diversity, for freedom of speech, for love, unity, togetherness, community. America is supposed to be a melting pot of community. It's not, but that's sort of the ideas that America kind of, you know, pumps its chest about. And, yeah, I don't know. It's cool to be home. I'm happy to be home. And I'm really happy that I got trapped in Peru. As crazy as that sounds. I know like a lot of people like that's gotta like a lot of people were like, dude, like what the fuck? You're stuck there? Like it's gotta be crazy. But my life is pretty crazy as it is. So it makes sense almost in a way for me to get stuck at an ayahuasca center. And I was so scared to take ayahuasca when I first went to Peru. My knees were shaking before my first ayahuasca ceremony. I was like, oh my fucking God, man. Because I smoked DMT a couple times before, and it's so intense. And ayahuasca is just equally as tense, but it comes on a little bit slower. So it's not like getting hit in the face with a baseball. It's not like getting sucker punched, you know? If you get sucker punched and you just like kind of wake up to the stars and you're like, what the fuck just happened? That's DMT, the smokable version of NN-DMT. But when you do ayahuasca, it's like you're in the ring. You got your boxing gloves on. You know that something's coming, you know? So it's not as, it comes slower. You still get punched, but you can kind of fight back a little bit, you know? You can get some breathers in instead of just getting your ass stomped by some astral entity. My personal opinion is that these things are real. I believe what the shamans believe, and shamans all over the world, unconnected to each other, have come to the same conclusion that there are intelligences that exist beyond our perception. Spirits, that's what we call them. I don't know if they're dead people. I actually don't think they're dead people. I think they evolved just like us. Like, I think when you are eating mushrooms and you have these crazy experiences of talking to like some cosmic entity, I think you're communicating with the mushroom. And I don't know how that works, but if you think about it, actually, you know, human beings are fungal bodies. We are mushrooms. We evolve from mushrooms billions and billions of years ago. So check this out. I'm pretty sure, and someone can Google this to fact check me. I don't have like my own Joe Rogan's Jamie, so I can say like, yo, pull this up, homie. But one of you homies out there, pull this up for me. I'm pretty sure mushrooms or some sort of fungal being was the first land life. It was the first life to evolve out of the water. And human beings evolved from that fungal mass. Billions and billions of years of mutations have led to the diversity of life that we see here. Climate's changing, you know, and all these things that the Earth has gone through has led to the diversity of life that we see today. And it all came from these few organisms, you know, billions and billions of years ago. And so what I'm trying to say is that mushrooms are the oldest being on this planet, one of the oldest beings on this planet. So think of the evolutionary timeline of the mushroom. And we are so far removed from the ancient mushroom, you know, that was the first land life compared to like a psilocybin mushroom. They're way closer in relationship to each other. When you compare, sorry about the dogs barking. When you compare us to that mushroom, right? For any of you guys that understand evolution, I'm sure you can follow me a little bit. And for those of you guys that don't believe in evolution, you're probably just like, Jesus Christ. But for real, hear me out. The mushroom must have such a deep, deep evolutionary history of like knowledge. Like Terence McKenna, for example, once in communication with the mushroom, the psychedelic mushroom, he said the mushroom told him, the voice of the mushroom told him, what you call man, we call time. And I felt this once when I was in the Redwoods in California. The Redwoods are these huge, like, trees that look like they exist in the prehistoric time where dinosaurs were and stuff like that. They're gigantic trees and there's huge forest. It's called the Avenue of the Giants. Very poetic, but it's a beautiful forest and you can almost feel that they're alive, right? But you can feel like, fuck, man, these trees have been through so much stuff. They've seen so much. All the stuff that we are so invested in is just nothing to them. It's just time. All our lives that are so, like, meaningful to us, we're so in it. These trees have seen all these humans generation after generation. Generation after generation after generation. Culture after culture. Native Americans to pilgrims to the multicultural cities that are now everywhere. Those trees have seen people from all of that. And more. Forest fires, earthquakes. So I think of the mushroom. And I feel like the mushroom must be an intelligent being. And I mean, maybe I sound ridiculous right now. But yeah, no, I really do feel like that. I feel like there must be an intelligence to plants. There must be an intelligence to other entities. Human beings can't be the only thing that is intelligent. We're just loud about it, you know? There's got to be something out there that's quietly intelligent, like an octopus or something, you know? But no, I really do think that there's an entity existing in the mushroom, a mycelial network, sort of like the internet. The internet is the collective consciousness of humanity, you know? We're all uploading every feeling we have, minute after minute, second after second. Literally, we are all connected all around the world now. The mushroom is like this too. And the internet is kind of like this lingering oracle. It's just like this ethereal intelligence, you know, that just is... It's going to wake up. Think about that. The internet's going to wake up. It already kind of is with Alexa and stuff like that. Alexa, what's the square root of number 3? You know, like you can talk to the internet now. And it's just going to get more and more complicated. You'll be talking to your house. You'll have different voices in different rooms. It'll be like Tony Stark. You know how he talks to his machine? He talks to his house and stuff like that? It's going to be like that. And you'll be able to have any voice you want respond to you. You'll have it call you whatever you want it to call you. It'll be like talking to a friend on the phone. It'll be that intelligent. Fuck, I forgot. I'm sorry, I got like a total clutter brain today. I forgot what led me to say that. But yeah, anyways, man. Life is crazy. It's a crazy life. But it's always been crazy, you know? It's always been crazy. It's always been crazy. We're just all connected now, so we can see how crazy it is. We can share the craziness. You think George Floyd is some unusual circumstance? There are people that believe that. But it's like that what Will Smith said. He's like, racism, it's not like becoming more It's not like there's, you know, like people out there that are converting people to become racist. It's just, it's getting filmed now. People got cameras and shit. We got social media now. And especially now that it's becoming a trend to call people out when they're racist. Well, you're going to get filmed if you're racist. Becky. We need some. I like Karen. Karen's a good one. We got Karen, Becky, Linda. What else? I was going to say Margaret, but Margaret seems like that's the ally name. Margaret would be there with milk helping you get the tear gas out of your eyes. Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, race has always been like, I've always been aware of race growing up. You know, I live in Detroit. My schools all throughout from elementary to high school were always very, black and white. My sister and most of my, not most of my cousins, but, you know, a big chunk of my cousins are all mixed. So, like, my sister's my sister. That's my, you know, like, that's my... I got a picture of her right here. I'll show you. But, yeah, we have different dads. But, that's my sister right there at Chuck E. Cheese with my niece. So, yeah, but, like, so I've always been aware on some level of race, you know? Like, I remember something, like, that used to stick out to me is once my sister said, I'm too white for the black kids and too black for the white kids. And she said that when I was young, and I was like, oh, man. It's deep. It's crazy to feel like that, you know? To be, like, kind of, like... And there was a lot of racists here. There's a lot of racists here still. Like, Detroit and, like, the Metro Detroit, around Detroit, is very... It's a very interesting place. Like, think about Kid Rock, right? Kid Rock, if for those of you guys that, like, I don't know, for those of you music buffs that know good taste, that have good taste. No, I don't know. I don't blame you if you don't know who Kid Rock is. But Kid Rock is also from Detroit. And he's, like, this white... He started off as a rapper back in the day. And then he sort of went country rock. He's sort of, like, the hillbilly's badass now. Like, the redneck's badass. And, so you get those kind of people too. We get a lot of hillbillies. That's what I call them. Hillbillies. Like people that are just sort of uneducated. You know, it's kind of like what people think of in the South of like, you know, sleeping with their cousins and stuff like that. Like those types of people. Maybe not that bad, but yeah, no, we definitely get a lot of like hillbillies here and just like really proud to be whites and people that like will proudly put the Confederate flag on their red pickup truck that's from like 1998 or something like that with some shitty loud muffler and they just drive around. So, I mean, that's not uncommon. And I remember like always growing up and hearing white kids like be racist. But also like at the same time, that was always like those kids, you know? Then there was also like all us normal people that all got along. And like, you know, some of my best friends growing up were black. I remember like, I went to a Lil Bow Wow concert once with my best friends. It was the first concert I ever went to, actually. It was Lil Bow Wow and B2K. And who else? What's that band? The girl's name. Cheetah Girls. I'm pretty sure it was the Cheetah Girls. Yeah, like my friend and his parents took me. My friend Nico. And I was probably like 12 years old, 11 years old or something. So like there's normal people, you know? But there was definitely, it wasn't uncommon to see racists around where I live. And there is still racists here. Like there was just on the news recently with those white dudes with the guns hanging out on like some government building with their guns like protesting the quarantine. That was in Michigan somewhere. Those are the people I'm talking about. But yeah, Detroit's a cool city, man. We all get along here. Everyone gets along for the most part. And It's a city that knows struggle. It's been through like a lot of racial stuff before in the past. And, you know, there's stuff going on here now with the George Floyd stuff and with all these people, you know, all of the people that were killed by police, all of the black people that were killed by police. So that stuff's going on. And, but yeah, Detroit's got like its own unique energy. And this is where I grew up. But it's got this sort of like, struggle inspires creativity. There's some neighborhoods, you know, six, seven miles away from here. Like, there's some really cool, like, old neighborhoods that are completely decked out as art projects, and people live in the house. It's called the Heidelberg Project. Anyone from Detroit will know what the Heidelberg Project is. And it's like these, even the streets are painted crazy colors, like on the actual streets. And they got like all kinds of art displays in the lawns, and it's like two streets that are just these art displays, and people live in the houses, and people come and donate to check out and take pictures and stuff like that, and they give the people money to like take a picture on their porch or, you know, whatever. I feel like struggle creates situations like that. It manifests community when there's a collective struggle. I mean, think about, like, Flint, man. Flint's an hour and a half away from where I'm at right now. And they're still having problems with their water, you know? So we're aware that the government doesn't care. And that inspires a sort of communal reaction. There's a lot of, like, there's community gardens and stuff in Detroit. And it's a good city. It's a city I'm proud to be from. And it's not the best city. It's the only city that's filed bankruptcy in the United States history, and it was the murder capital for a while. But no, it's a city that has a lot of heart, and yeah, there ain't much to see, like, as far as the tourist stuff goes. But yeah, we go hard and we come together here, and that's what I like about the city. So I came home to all those protests, actually, from Peru. I flew home, and, like, the day I got home is, like, the first day of protests. It's like, the day, I think, like, I got home, George Floyd got killed. I got home, and people started going crazy. And let me just say, I flew into Miami. Peru did more of a check for coronavirus as I was leaving. They did nothing in the U.S. They didn't check me. They didn't ask me no questions about coronavirus. They didn't ask me to quarantine myself or anything like that. I don't know if that matters, but yeah, so I came home to these riots, or to the beginning of the riots. I knew this was going to happen, you know, maybe not like this, but I knew that one day shit's just going to pop off. You know, I knew something crazy was building up. For one, I feel like everyone kind of knew it in their heart and in their gut. They're like, man, something crazy is going to happen in my lifetime. I just don't know what it is. And I feel like it still hasn't even happened yet. This is just the beginning, I feel like. And maybe you guys also feel like that. You can let me know in the comments. Or you can leave me an iTunes comment and a nice review if you want. Please. No, come on. Please. 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 No, but yeah. I don't know, man. Like, it's just such a strange time, and I feel like it's just going to keep getting stranger and stranger. And yeah, you know, whatever. Fuck this system. Fuck this way of life that we've been living. It clearly doesn't work. Clearly doesn't work. We've seen it. Like, think about how long you've been alive, right? Most of you guys listening to this podcast are in your 20s, maybe your 30s, a little bit older. You have been alive long enough to see that nothing changes. It's the same bullshit after same bullshit. It's like the same dickhead in a suit. He just keeps, like, changing his mask. Goes a little bit to left, goes a little bit to the right. You know, we do the little fucking musical chair dance, and yeah, it's crumbs. It's crumbs. Throw a little bit of crumbs to the left. Keep them pleased for a couple years. Oh, the right are pissed now. Throw them a little bit of crumbs. And it's just like this, it's just a game. What has changed? What has changed without revolution? Without peaceful and violent revolution, what has changed? Nothing. Nothing. You think if there wasn't a Malcolm X, you think segregation would have just willingly given it up? You think the government would have been like, okay, segregation's wrong, with no Malcolm X, with no Martin Luther King, with no Rosa Parks, with none of these leaders of the or these people, these inspiration pioneers of the civil rights movement? No, they would still have slaves if it was their way, but we fight back, and that's how we get shit done. And that's what's happening now. That's what's happening now. We are fighting back and getting stuff done because they're not going to do it. They don't care about us. They care about money. They care about perpetuating their power, their money, and exercising and demonstrating their narrative of life and forcing it upon us so that we live in this crazy little hysterical world that they've created that doesn't represent the average views of the normal person. It doesn't represent like the compassion of like a normal person. Clearly, I mean, that dude put his neck, he put his knee on that man's neck and until he died. And this system has perpetuated that type of behavior. It allows it. It allows it. People talk about how the system isn't racist systematically. There's no institutionalized racism. It's like, bitch, my grandma went to an all-white school. She just died last year. An all-white school. The people that are running the country right now, look at them. They're all old white people that are my grandma's age. They were raised with those values. One person ago, they were going to all-white schools. Think about what their parents were teaching them and stuff like that. That was one person ago. Those people are, they're alive. Those people are alive still. So, I mean, to say that those ideas aren't still being echoed, aren't still present in the system of the people that are running things is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know. Look at, like, the Black Lives Matter stuff is the fuel for this fire, and I hope it keeps on going. This is kind of like, you don't really see the media talking about it anymore. It's kind of starting to die down. It's not. I mean, I see stuff on Instagram and stuff like that. There's still huge protests everywhere, and I hope people keep it up. I hope people keep it going, despite the media talking about it or not. This is how we're going to change stuff, you know? This is time to wake up. Time to wake up. You are a human being. Do you realize that? I know you look in the mirror and you do your hair and stuff like that. You brush your teeth, but, like, do you ever just look in the mirror, look at yourself in the eyes, realize that, holy shit, I'm just in some body that is slowly being sucked away by time. And here I am in this planet. And somehow I found myself in this weird situation where I'm just a human being. Despite color, despite where I was born, despite all the stuff I wear or identify with, I'm just a human being. I'm naked under all my clothes. You're naked under all your clothes. And we're in the same position. We're just these creatures on a planet in an infinite universe, a seeming infinite universe of mystery. And here we are, like, focusing on these bizarre concepts of, like, you have an interesting, well, not, you have a skin color different from mine. And that's wrong. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I think of ways that white privilege exists. Like, I try to think of examples. Like, where does white privilege exist? Like, in which ways do I experience white privilege? Like, I'm scared of police. I can't walk around out here. You know, like, if I was walking around in some of these neighborhoods, police would pull me, they would ask me what I'm doing. I've been pulled over by the police for no reason. I've been to jail. I never got like beat up by the police. So like I've gone through this process of like thinking of these things. Like where is my white privilege? People have accused me of stealing in stores. But then I went through all these motions of like going through this, like trying to find a place where I've been privileged in a situation where someone that was black or maybe Muslim or I don't know, anyone other than white, would their outcome be different? And I found one, and it's a big one. And when I turned like 20, 21, I was dealing drugs. I was selling drugs, you know? I don't know. Whatever. I was selling drugs. And I was making a lot of money, doing good for myself, selling drugs. I was dating this bartender, this pretty girl. And, you know, it was an interesting period in my life. I sold some drugs to an undercover cop in front of a GameStop. And they arrested me right there, right? Right after I gave the guy the stuff, he gave me the money. Got back into my car. And as soon as I was getting ready to start the car, all happy because I just made a bunch of money, cops surrounded the car with guns and stuff like that. I went to jail, got out, was out for 6 months. I only went to jail for like a night. Got out. 6 months later, got something saying you have to go to court. Here's your court date. Went to court. There was a kid in front of me who was getting in trouble because he got pulled over and caught with weed. And the judge it was a black kid. And the judge was so harsh on him, man. She sent him to jail for 30 days. And I don't know if he was like a repeat offender or whatever, but this is just my perception. He was my age. He's probably 20, 21. He just got caught with some weed while he was speeding, you know? I was like, that's not that big of a deal. Let's hear how the judge reacts. And she was so mean to him. So mean to this kid. And she was like, you have to have 30 days in jail. And I was like, fuck. After all the stuff I was reading online too, I should have went to jail, you know? If this kid's going to jail for a month over driving with some weed, like I'm definitely going to jail. I get up there. And I think that the judge was actually a guy. And the judge was talking to me, blah, 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 blah. Probation. 2 years probation. I was like, what the fuck? 2 years probation? I was like, oh my God, man. If I was a black kid, I would be thrown in jail right now. And so, yeah, I do think white privilege exists. And that's that is an example of it right there in my life that I've experienced on a personal level. And I know a lot of, like, white people out there don't think, like, I see people arguing on Facebook, like, I don't have white, like, stop, white privilege is a myth, I have to work hard for everything and stuff like that. It's not saying, like, yeah, everyone suffers. I know, like, white people suffer too, you know, people suffer. But, I mean, white people definitely suffer, but not in the same way. Not in a way that you're going to go to jail over a lesser punishment because of your skin color or something like that, you know, or you come from a certain area, or you got to teach a lesson or something, you know what I mean? So, and also all the rioting and looting, anyone that's against this rioting and looting, like, first of all, fuck all these major corporations. Don't go rioting your local mom and pop or local, you know, like, homey businesses. Like, if your friends own some businesses and stuff like that, like, make sure people aren't destroying those, and make sure, like, you're taking care of your community and the small businesses. But fuck all these big corporations like Target or Walmart. They're all just as guilty as any of these bad cops of exploiting people and taking advantage of poor people and kicking people while they're down, or taking advantage of them in the most exploitable position or vulnerable position that they're in. So, You can't raise people. You can't raise generations of people on TV when TV is beaming into their consciousness advertising and packages and products, and you are a consumer. Buy. Your purpose is to work to buy things. And then all of a sudden, when a revolution happens, they start smashing the windows of the stores and stealing everything inside. You can't be surprised. And you can't even really critique it. This is a byproduct of, you know, like when you're watching TV and it's like, if you've ever had mesothelioma, then you can get this medicine. Side effects may include diarrhea, whatever, and they list like a crazy bunch of crazy side effects. This is a side effect of capitalism. This is a side effect of capitalism. You're going to raise us as our purpose. You're going to tell us. This is what I mean. Remember earlier when I said that they give us our narrative? You're going to tell me that my purpose here as a human being is to like make you rich and just like buy things. You know, like think about, we identify with products for a reason. Think about why do we identify with products for a reason? Because they've stolen our power. This is what real magic is and real spell casting is. They've stolen our power by giving us the narrative of who we are. They take away our identity and feed us an identity that gives them power, that gives them wealth, and extracts our life force and gives it to them. Think about it. We buy expensive brands and expensive stuff because we have no connection or self-awareness. And I don't mean that in an offensive way, but I mean that in like the kind of way of true. It's true. You don't know who you are, so you fill in all these things with like, well, I'm this guy. I got these cool shoes. I got this nice car. I got this pretty girlfriend. You know, I get my hair cut once a week, and I got these cool tattoos, and I love weed, dude. And my favorite band is this. I love this artist, and I can't wait to go to that concert. Man, quarantine sucks. When can I go to the beach and drink? You know, like all these things. I'm not like free from this. I'm not liberated from this, you know. I'm totally an egotistical person that wants to wear cool shoes and wants to be perceived a certain way, like anyone, you know. We are social creatures, so it's not like a bad thing that we do this. But that's the thing, is that these corporations have understood that we are social creatures. We have this inclination to be accepted by each other, to be in community, to love each other. And so we desperately are seeking validation through different things. And these corporations have geniusly exploited that aspect of ourself as a way to, it's like black magic. They're extracting, we're working our life force away 40 hours a week to essentially, like you've seen that quote, we buy things we don't like, or we buy things we don't need to impress people we don't like, and those people, they don't even care. They don't care anyway. I don't know what that quote is, but it's something like that. You know, like we buy shit to impress people that don't even care. And the shit, we don't even need the shit. So we're in this sort of strange identity crisis where it's getting filled by like black magicians. These dark magicians have seen this gap, and it's a cultural, it's intentional. They've intentionally created these black holes in each person by raising them a specific way, by not teaching them who they are, not teaching them their power as an individual, as a human soul. Think about the empowerment it must have been to be like in a native tribe, or in a tribe that's still around today somewhere, like in the Amazon or something like that. Like, they must feel such connection with the earth and such like proudness when they build their homes and they feed their families and stuff like this. And here they cater us. They cater to us. They make us so comfortable that we don't want to revolt. We don't want to revolt. Why would you revolt? You got entertainment, you have a TV, you have potato chips, you got just enough food, you know, and the food's all bad and keeps you fat, so you don't want to be energetic or active, you just want to keep on eating and just really, you know what? Yeah, I know they're all crooks, but yeah, what can I do? You know, I got to go to work, I got a family to take care of, and it's true, you do have to take care of yourself. You do have a family to take care of, and we've become so embedded, so woven into the fabric of their system, we can't get out of it. We can't get out of it. We're stuck completely in their system, in their world, in their black magic spell hallucination that they've casted. We can't break out of it because they own us. We are spiritual slaves to these demons, to these demonic puppeteers that navigate our lives and just are sucking our energy away and exploiting our desires, the things that we want. They know what we want, and they make it for us. And, you know, they're just going to keep on triggering the things that we want in life and packaging it to us in the most consumable, easily digestible way, void of anything of meaning or nutrition, until we're just like soulless, consuming things. But anyways, yeah, man, I support all this Black Lives stuff. I support all these, I support Native Lives Matter. Shout out to Urban Native Era. Yeah, man, shout out to all the people that are doing, like, the indigenous work out there, because, I mean, a lot of these traditions are completely wiped away. You know, we've wiped away these people's history. We've wiped away native names, languages. Same with, like, all the black people here in America that have, you know, roots in Africa. We've taken their names, we've taken their history and given them some, you know, westernized, like, bullshit. So it's important for us to decolonize, you know? This is our planet. You know, people seem to be passionate about that. We can do that, you know? We can do that. They're just like people running the planet. They're just like these people, you know? There's more of us. If we just say no, if we collectively say, fuck you, this is our home, we are in charge now. Try it. Try us. Try us. Do you want to try us? You think these riots are bad? They're freaking out over these riots. You guys think these riots are bad? These riots are elementary compared to what collectivization and an organization can do. They told Malcolm X that he has... No man should have that much power. Think about what we can do now with the internet. Think about what the George Floyd movement, the biggest civil rights movement. And it's not just about George Floyd, actually. It's not just about George Floyd. It's deeper than that. This movement, this Black Lives movement, because it's not only just Black Lives either. Black Lives is the fuel. But there's people protesting for all kinds of things now. There's people protesting anti-capitalism. They're protesting this two-system party. Think about it. They're anti-Trump. This right now is such a hot time politically and socially this is just the start. If we wanted to take it far, this is really just the start. This is just the warning, you know? This is just the warning. And, I don't mean that in a kind of violent way either. You know, the revolution doesn't have to be violent. Like I said, all it requires is non-compliance. Fuck you guys. We are now in charge. Power to the people. Jeff Bezos, your money now belongs to us. So we go into, did you see what they did to the Seattle police department? Let me show you this picture real quick. For those of you guys that are watching here on YouTube. And for those of you that, oops, shit. For those of you that are not watching on YouTube and just like listening on Spotify or something. This is a picture of the Seattle Police Department. And they've boarded it up. Okay, so if you can see here, this is my friend Eves. This is his hand right there. And it says Seattle. Well, it would have said Seattle Police Department. As you can see, it's all boarded up. The doors are boarded up. It's got like Black Lives Matter spray painted on it. And it now says Seattle's People Department. They spray painted over Police Department in black and wrote People. Seattle's People Department. This is exactly is what I'm saying, is that like we can stop playing their game and regain the power and redistribute the wealth. It's all just a matter of organization, and it doesn't have to be violent at all. You know who's going to be violent? Is them, the government. The government's going to be violent. They're going to use what they can against the people. They are. Look at what they're doing to peaceful protesters. I always wondered if there was a revolution, would the military and the police fight the people, or would they join us? Like, if the government was really like a bad government, surely like the military and the police and stuff like that, they would join us, because they'd be like, yo, fuck this government. Why we fight for some government that's corrupt? But as we can see now, they will fight for them. And they are the aggressors. It's not us. So that's the big problem there. We don't have to worry about getting violent. And the thing is, I mean, there is violence is called for sometimes, but the thing is with violence is you're playing into their paradigm. When you're violent, they can arrest you. They can consider it in an illegal gathering. But when you're peaceful, when you're non-compliant, when you're just not engaged, is when it breaks the paradigm. It breaks the cycle, and they can't do anything. That's why they're putting these bricks around. That's why they're instigating people to become violent. Because as soon as you become violent is as soon as they can get you. And they can discredit the movement. They can discredit the message. These guys are violent looters. Blah, 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 blah. Looters. They're breaking windows. They're ruining their own communities. You know, that stupid news voice. It is not even about George Floyd at this point. It has now become about looting and stealing and taking what they can. Fuck off. Fuck the media. And fuck. Oh shit, my camera's falling again. I don't know, man. It's such a Twilight Zone episode. Like, what the fuck is going on, really? Like, what is going on? We are a human civilization. What is this weird drama and this weird theater we are playing? It's so bizarre. And the fact that news channels, for one, they don't provide actual news. They provide sensational porn to keep you engaged in drama in theaters. It's no different than watching like a movie or something that's designed to keep you on the edge of your seat. That's why tonight at 12 we will be talking about the riots and the looting, and we talk like this because
We want to be dramatic, to pull you in, to keep you on the edge of your seat. And we'll be right back after this quick advertisement of some product that is made in a factory with people that hate their lives and work in a factory that has nets to stop them from jumping off the side of the building. And we'll be right after this. See you soon. Anyways, like, you would never talk like that in a legitimate conversation. You wouldn't come up to me and be like, "Hello, Dakota, how are you doing? Oh man, this is some weather we're having, right? Did you hear my friend Dean over there? Hey Dean, how's the weather?" You would never talk like that to me in person, because that's would be weird. You wouldn't be a human at that point. At that point, you would be confirming every reptilian suspicion I have. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's a crazy fucking world, man. Crazy world. One second, boys. Ow. Alright, we're gonna pack another one real quick. Yeah, I don't know. You know what else is crazy? It's like, I use Twitter a lot. I mean, I don't tweet so much, but I do check Twitter a lot. And I look around. And I check what's trending and stuff like that. And every day someone new is getting canceled. I check my phone every day. Like, I wonder who's getting canceled today. Cancel culture is a strange one. I don't really like cancel culture. This sort of like mob mentality of people that gang up on people. Sometimes I like it. Sometimes I feel like it is called for. And there are some people like Harvey Weinstein, Jeffrey Epstein, all these people that seem to have Steen in their last name. All these people like that. We should cancel those people. You're not welcome. You are not welcome. People like you are, you fuck kids. You make women or men fuck you for, you know, like job opportunities or stuff like that. You are not welcome. That's not how we do it in our hood, you know? So, but some people, you know, I just don't think, let me think of someone that didn't deserve it. Like Joey Diaz, for example. Some of you guys might know who Joey Diaz is. Uncle Joey. Twitter was trying to cancel Joey Diaz because he said... And I mean, for those of you guys that know Joey Diaz, he's like this kind of gangster, Cuban... I think he's from like New York or something like that. He's like the traditional kind of mobster kind of guy. And the dude has had a crazy life. I mean, he's robbed people. He... you know, was selling drugs, and he's always been very open about his life and how he's become a better person. How comedy has changed his life. He's now, you know, he loves his kids. He's got a wife, and like, you know, people go through crazy shit in life. You know, we are all victims of our environment. We're all victims of circumstance and of the conditions that we are raised with. We have, you know, if you're raised with wolves, you're not gonna act like the prince or something like that. So he's always openly shared how crazy his life is, how much crazy and fucked up things he's done in his life, and Twitter wanted to cancel him for it. And it's like, and they were trying to cancel him for something he did like 25 years ago or something. And what he said was he made some girl, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but he made some woman comedian suck his dick to get stage time on Joe Rogan's podcast. And Joe Rogan laughed about it, and people tried to cancel Joe Rogan too. And I mean, that's pretty fucked up to do that. No doubt. I mean, you can't make anyone, like, again, we were just talking about how any type of sexual exploitation is not welcome. But like, you can't, I don't believe you should cancel someone for something they did 25 or 30 years ago, when they are clearly not that person anymore, you know? So I don't like that. That's what I don't like about cancel culture. What else? Chris D'Elia. That's another one. Chris D'Elia got canceled. I love Chris D'Elia's podcast. He once made fun of me on Twitter randomly. What was he doing? He was flirting with a 17-year-old. And when she was like, "Yo, I'm 17," he was like, "Oh, you're too young." And then when she turned 18, he was like, "Hey, do you want to come over and make out?" So people are saying he was grooming her. And then there was another situation where he was like, "Hey, come to my show and make out with me, or come to my hotel and cuddle me." And the girl was like, "Chris, I'm only 16. And then there's been a couple more like that. So there's like these reoccurring themes of him talking to younger girls. Again, these are all from like 10 years ago. I don't know how he has so many young girls on dial like that. But it does seem like he's saying like, "You're too young," whenever they tell him his age. And then he does continue talking to some of them though. So that's another weird thing. But, he didn't have sex with anybody. He's so far just seems to be attracted to younger looking girls. It seems like he did say like, "You're too young," every time anyone said their age, but then he kept talking to him. I mean, you're obviously going to say you're too young. Cause if you're like, "Yo, you're 16 and you're like, you don't even acknowledge it. That's weird too. I don't know. Do people deserve to have their lives completely destroyed, their reputations completely and utterly decapitated? You get fired from your jobs. All your friends denounce you publicly. Sometimes I think, I mean, you have to, if you're a pedophile, like if he's a proper pedophile, then like, man, you're not welcome. You're not welcome. Sorry. Sorry. What is up, for one, with all these pedophiles in Hollywood and in power positions? Like, when I was in Peru just a couple weeks ago, me and Coleman were talking about how all these high-up priests and stuff like that, how people in the Catholic Church or just in the church in general, how they end up molesting kids once they get to a certain power position. And is that, like, do they have some secret book or some secret like rituals or something like that they do once you get to a certain position of knowledge? Like, you become a priest and they're like, "Here's the book of priests full of secret knowledge." And in there it says like, you need to fuck kids to stay youthful or connect to God or something weird like that. Cause there's way too many people in the church that are fucking little kids for it to just to be a coincidence. There seems to be some sort of like pedophilia ring or something is going on in that situation. And also in Hollywood, like, what is up with all these, and in politics, what is up with all these pedophiles? Alex Jones has been saying this for years. Since I was in high school, Alex Jones has been like, "They're all pedophiles. They're coming for your kids. They're coming for your kids. They're pedophile demons coming for your kids. They want your souls." And, yeah, it's true. How crazy is it that that's true? I remember being like, "Yeah. Yeah. George Bush is a pedophile. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure George Bush is wearing some hooded shroud in the middle of the California redwoods, worshiping some giant owl demon near some lake to a mock human sacrifice ritual. Sure. But, you know, Bohemian Grove is real. Jeffrey Epstein is real. There are so many pedophilia stuff that's coming out, man. It's what the fuck is going on? Whoever writes the universe, twist. Full of twist. Full of twist. Because it just is one thing after another. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, yeah, Ron Jeremy got canceled also. I just did a podcast with Ron Jeremy, so hold on. Hello, my name is Dakota. I run a podcast called A Place for Humans Podcast, and I just want to make a public announcement real quick while I have your attention that I do not condone Ron Jeremy. I don't know Ron Jeremy. It was his manager reached out and said, hey, I'm looking for a podcast to put Ron Jeremy on. And I was like, yeah, I'll talk to Ron Jeremy. That would be fun to talk to some porno guy, right? But Ron Jeremy has been now accused and arrested for raping 4 people. And we here, me, at A Place for Humans podcast, here in my bedroom, I don't condone that. I hardly even condone porn. I just thought Ron Jeremy would be an interesting person to talk to. So I just want to say, like, I've now unlisted those videos, so you can only see it if you have the link. You can no longer just find it on my YouTube channel. Yeah. If you're raping people, then you deserve to be canceled, I believe. You deserve to go to jail and stuff like that. So, like, in this situation, if Ron did do this, which he might have, I don't know the guy, then, yeah. You know, I did find it weird when I was talking to Ron. I said something about Harvey Weinstein, and he seemed to have got offended when I said that. And I was, in my head, after he said it, I was like, oh, shit, like, is that his homie? Did I just offend him by saying something about his friend or something like that? He seemed to have got a little bit put off when I mentioned a joke about Harvey Weinstein. And now, it all makes sense. No, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. I'll let it go to court before I hang the man, you know? I believe that everyone should go to trial and there should be sufficient evidence and stuff like that before we start crucifying people. But it's not looking good. And I just want to say, like, yeah, I don't want to give anyone like that a platform. And yeah, I didn't know. If I knew, I wouldn't have had him on. So yeah, my bad for having something like that. And Jenna Marbles, for example, that's another one I don't really think deserves to get the kind of heat she's getting. She just quit YouTube, Jenna Marbles did. And I've met Jenna Marbles a few times in Florida at Playlist Live. Danced with her, drunk. I've drank with her and hung out with her, and she said she's quitting YouTube because she's done blackface a few times as like a joke, and that's not cool either. You know, that's very insensitive to do blackface. But she doesn't deserve to have her whole career removed or something. You know, I think these things are circumstantial. You know, like there's that one governor who did blackface, and his other friend did a KKK, was in a KKK outfit, and that was a hidden picture that came out, you know? That right there is a little bit of a different context than some girl that's doing some insensitive comedy publicly on the internet for everyone to see. And she's trying to be funny. She's not being, she's not intentionally trying to be offensive. So I think, like, the context is important. Does she deserve to have her life ruined because of that? I don't think so. I think we need to, like, just educate people and just, like, be real, you know, like, be compassionate. And, like, she obviously has been educated and recognizes it's not real, which is why she's quitting YouTube. So, yeah, I don't know. We've all done things that we would hate other people for, you know? We all have demons. So, I don't know. What did I talk about in this podcast? I basically called for a revolution. A peaceful revolution that is a complete non-compliance to the current system and to the current people in power. There's 300... million people in America, I think. If even a quarter of us stopped paying taxes, stopped engaging in like the work system here, and created an alternative system, you know, we took over a part of the country. Say we took over California. That's a liberal place. I could see it happening in a place like that. We take over California, Los Angeles, and Southern California. We create our own jobs. We create our own currency. Why is that not possible? Why is that not possible? You're telling me, like, this movement, this civil rights movement that's going on right now, is happening all over the world. Because George Floyd was killed, it has sparked a revolution all over the world. New Zealand, Palestine, Israel, Iran, Europe, Central South America, everywhere, all over the United States. Every major city in the United States has had protests. It's possible with enough focus, with enough organization, it's possible. We did this in a month. This has been going on for a couple weeks. Look what we have accomplished. Look what we have done. They're paying attention. Not as much as we would like, but they are paying attention. Think about if we kept going. It's possible, man. This is our home and our planet. And we can do whatever we want. This is our home and our planet. And we plan to take it from the ones who want it for themselves. No more Jeff Bezos or billionaires. Give that money to the poor people. Or we will eat you. We will eat the rich. And take your houses and live in it. No one deserves $1 billion. Are people sleeping in the streets? There's people sleeping in the streets. Got no shoes on their feet. But you don't care as long as your quota meets. So anyways,
yeah, I don't know.
Shout out to Palestine, Palestinian Lives Matter. What else did we talk about? Yeah, so we're calling for the revolution. We are calling for... what else? We're calling for cancel culture to cancel the people that really need to be canceled. It's a powerful energy, you know? So collectivize that energy and, like, utilize it. But people are so sensitive, man. Like, someone was just freaking out to me on Instagram saying, like, you appropriate India because you travel there and you put advertisements on your videos. Thus, you profit off of Indian culture, yet you don't talk about things that are happening in India. Why don't you talk about women's issues in India? Or this issue in India, LGBTQ issues in India. Where is your voice? If you love Indian culture so much, you talk about how much you love India. You always are in India. You're not an ally to us. Where are you? Well, it's not like for one. Okay, I hear you. If you want me to amplify your voice, educate me and ask me. Don't attack me. And two, I'm a dude from America. Like, what business do I have to come and protest for issues in a country that, you know, I've only spent a couple months in? You know, what issue do I have to get involved in politics in India? Like, where is my place in the political spectrum of India? I'm just like a dude. I'm just a dude, you know, but I hear you and I understand that anger. But this is what I mean is, like, that anger needs to be directed at the right targets. Don't come after me. I love India. I want the best for India. I want the best for all people. And I want to help amplify the best I can those voices of the people that need their stories told. But I can't do that if you're trying to like get an angry mob against me and call me like a cultural appropriator and try to get my YouTube channel taken down, or, you know, like, just talk to me and let's do this, you know? Let's harness that energy and direct it towards where it needs to be directed, because I'm just like a guy, you know. I can't change anything, and if there is something I can change, I want to help me understand, you know. Don't get rid of me or don't attack me. But I understand that people want to be heard and they're seeking for someone to listen to them. So when you're on Twitter, when you're on Facebook and you see some random person say something, you need to have your opinion. You need to share your opinion because you need someone to listen to you, because we don't feel valued. No one is listening. So we will scream it to anyone in our reach. And I feel it also because I do that to people too, in different ways. So I get it. I don't know. So what are we going to call this podcast? What are we talking about? We talked about cancel culture, ayahuasca, the protest. Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, in solidarity for Black Lives Matter, and for all the movements that are trying to push us in a new direction, towards a direction that is of love, of compassion, of people. Yeah, let's just take like a little moment of silence to recognize all the voices that are screaming out there right now in the streets. Let's just take a moment of silence right now so that they can be heard. Don't let them fool you. Don't let them fool you. Don't let them take your power, because you are creative potential and you can do anything that you want. They don't want you to know that. They want you to be afraid. Anyways, yeah, so my name is Dakota. If this is the first time you're hearing this podcast, then please head over to iTunes, leave me a 5-star review, please, if you liked it. If not, then whatever, leave a 1-star review and tell me to fuck off. But no, it would really be helpful for all you guys to go over to iTunes and help me on there, because that helps like boost me up in the iTunes charts, and that gets more people to see the podcast, and yeah. I want to start doing something a little bit more interactive on the podcast. Like, I want to start having segments. I want to start having more guests on the podcast. And I want to start having more viewers on the podcast. So, let's think. Let's do a segment. What can we do that's like a segment? Like, I watch Theo Vaughn and Brendan Schaub's podcast. What's it called? King of the Sting. And they do, like, Rip My Drip, where people send in pictures of their outfits. And then they just kind of, like, make fun of the way they dress.
So let's think, like, what's something I can do? I don't want to make fun of you guys. I want to do something like that. I remember Russell Brand's radio show. He used to have a segment on there called Gay, where people would send in like their gay problems, like maybe they wanted to come out or something like that, or their friend was gay and they had some story or something like that. And yeah, he had that Gay. So yeah, leave some suggestions. What are some segments that we can do on this podcast that would be fun? Something that could need a solution. That way, like, you guys can help also leave solutions for them. Yeah, I don't know. Leave a comment for me, and whatever one gets the most thumbs up on YouTube will be like, we'll make it a segment. And, I need someone to, like, help make me thumbnails. And, what else? Yeah, I don't know. I need a co-host also. So, we got lots of progress to make in this A Place for Humans podcast. And I thought Ron Jeremy was a stepping stone. Jesus, man. Anyways, we do have some cool guests that we have planned. I've been a little sad lately. I don't know. I don't know if I'm just like, you know, kind of taking in the sadness of the world and sort of being in this like, you know. I don't know. But yeah, make sure to subscribe to me on YouTube, Dakota of Earth. Check out my videos, of my travel videos. And, yeah. And shout out to these guys, over, what are they called? I think they're called Urban Native Era. And they gave me this hat that I'm wearing right here. Urban Native Era. And this hat I'm wearing, it says, you are on native land. So, shout out to those guys if you guys are interested in some indigenous, supporting like an indigenous-run clothing company. They have all kinds of messages that are like inspirational for, it's cool. Urban Native Era. So shout out to those guys for sending me this hat. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, let's end this podcast with a little song. Corando. Peace out, you guys. My name is Dakota, and this is A Place for Humans podcast. Thanks for watching. Go to iTunes for me, baby. One love.